Francesca present Seven Matrimony.
Welcome to another episode of Cinematrimony. I'll probably cut out that part about you talking about your pizza that you're eating, but we've got another one in short order for you this week because it's kind of the holidays and we get to see more movies right now. So,
I feel like this one we're going to have to preface with spoiler alert. I don't feel like we can talk about it without spoiling.
You might need to get a little bit closer here.
I don't feel like we can talk about it without spoiling.
Yeah, it'll definitely. We'll go ahead and say full on spoiler alert for this because.
We're not talking M. Night Shyamalan, but there are character developments that you.
Yes.
It's important that you learn about them when they come along.
I agree. So, big time spoiler alert. Don't listen unless you've seen the movie, I would say. But, that said, we are talking about Diablo Cody's. Well, I should say Jason Reitman, but it's, Diablo Cody wrote it. It is young adult. Not a movie that's gotten as much attention as I expected it would. I mean, it's getting some talk, and certainly Charlize Theron is getting some talk for her performance, but it's not a movie that's, really there aren't that many movies out there right now blowing people away as far as like the Oscar buzz goes, but.
It's not really a showboat movie.
It's not.
There's not really even that many characters in it.
And that's what's interesting, you have expectations of Diablo Cody's work because so far, even though I would say you and I are pretty big fans of hers.
To be fair, we haven't seen Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body, but both big fans of Juno and of her three-season television series, United States of Tara, which I think is certainly was better writing than Juno was. I think she showed like a lot of progression, basically, with her work there.
To be fair, she was a creator of Tara and wrote some episodes, but not all.
I think she wrote a good bit of it, but. That said, this to me represents yet another kind of advancement for Diablo Cody. I would say she becomes less gimmicky and thus less easily enjoyable as she continues to put out more things here. But her writing is becoming very sharp and insightful. And it's really the only thing I can think to compare it to. It feels a lot like early 80s Woody Allen. And I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but it does to some of our listeners.
Hurtful, by the way, big jerk.
Well, I just know you're not a huge fan. My parallel is that she seems to be more and more getting into... she writes about extremely flawed characters, and she writes things that happen that are so dark that they're almost funny because of how awful it is, what's happening. But she's not being ironic about it. She's not laughing at her characters, I think she genuinely feels sympathy for them. It's not like black comedy, it's just that it's kind of absurdly dark, but it's very sympathetic, I think.
Well, I feel like this was probably, more than anything, one of her more autobiographical things. Not in as much as, the plot of she's going home to try to get with her high school boyfriend. But I think Diablo Cody's sort of backstory is Midwest kid who, had big dreams kind of thing.
Right.
I sort of think the way the movie leaves it, it's you don't really get the happy ending, but I think kind of just to skip ahead to the very, very end, she leaves feeling vindicated, and of course we, the audience, know, no, you still did horrible things, but I think it's a happy ending in as much as someone like that does not belong in a nice town populated with nice people. She does belong in the city. Even though she's miserable and she hasn't solved any of her problems, you don't deserve, these people in this town do not deserve you to be thrust upon them.
If you're looking at it from a cosmic standpoint and sort of saying, it's for the best that she left. And that might be true. But I think the reason she left is funny.
Right,
because
the wrong reason.
What basically happens is she forgets all the lessons she learned the night before. And what happens is, what I think Diablo Cody is saying there is, this is what ends up happening and why these people don't change, is because for every Mavis there is in the world, no matter whether she backwards falls into learning a lesson about life, there will always be people out there who reinforce her messed up view of the world because people with no self-esteem and pathetic people like that are drawn to people like Mavis and need to be there. I don't think codependent is the word, but basically they need to enable people like Mavis to feel important. Mm-hmm. And that's what ends up happening in the end. This girl, and there would have been another one too. There's probably a bunch of those people in that town. And that's why there sort of still is a little bit of the class system of the jocks and the losers, mm-hmm. even in that town. But, I think what we are left with, and you might be right, it might sort of in the world of that movie be for the best that that happens. But I think what happens really is that Mavis doesn't learn anything, and she's going to continue to be this incredibly aimless, lost juvenile woman.
Here's what I will posit, giving her the benefit of the doubt a little bit too, is that she, you know, because of, again, this is major spoiler alert, but because of you find out the depth of the history, mm-hmm. with the ex-boyfriend, and that she could have had the suburban life, you know, if all things went well, which they probably wouldn't have, but there was a moment where she was almost going to settle down in a small town and have a family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she didn't, and, you know, she convinced herself that that was for the best, that she didn't. But then she went to the big city and was miserable. And so on some level, she may have had to go exorcise the demon of, maybe she always had this nagging thought in the back of her head, like, maybe I should have, you know, just stayed there and been a housewife and I would have been happy. And mm-hmm. then, so she goed. Mm-hmm. Good job, me, too, with the talking. So she went back. She tried to claim what she thought was owed her. And it didn't work out. And maybe the idea is, okay, well, now she can go back to the city and having, you know, gotten that monkey off her back, and maybe she'll get her happy ending now.
Well, here's my question, though, is why do you think, because I was sort of thinking about that backstory was meant to explain who she is, because obviously I think the title of the movie refers to, obviously there's some reference to the fact that she writes young adult fiction, but she's good at that because she is stuck in her teenage years.
Well, right.
She can't get out of that.
Remember,
but
this
what
very telling
is the,
moment.
What do you think the connection is between her having a miscarriage and her being stuck in that time period? I mean, is that just a psychological trauma? Do you think that's the point
of
that?
Well, I think that story plot was... Story plot? I don't... What was in this pizza, Matt?
Crack pizza.
I think maybe that was just supposed to give us a reason why she was so obsessed with this guy from, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago.
But I don't think she's just obsessed with
the guy. But here's the thing with the young adult connection. You know, if you recall, there's possibly two scenes where she overhears teenagers talking and puts it into the book. And the one time when she's at the, what does she call it, Kentucky...
The
Kentucky Hut.
Kentucky Hut, yeah.
Right. She overhears this kid saying
that's very early Diablo Cody.
But
there.
We'll forgive her that because that was really the only time she was like being glib
right.
in that way. But she overhears this girl being very hyperbolic and, you know, professing her love for this guy. He's the stars and the moon. And you think, okay, she's going to put that in the book, but then she ends up saying
no,
it
she
to
used
him.
It. Yeah.
So she clearly really like still thinks in the way a teenager would.
Yes.
And, you know,
everything she does in this movie
she said that her best
teenage
she was at
behavior.
Her best in high school. She obviously thinks that was the best time of her life.
Right.
And there, you know, and so it's sort of by the way she writes and what she has to tune into in the world, she's sort of been able to reinforce in herself that she can still live like that. And even like I was thinking about, like, the way she dressed and the way she, her haircut and, like, her makeup were kind of still, they were dated. Like, it was, like, hot girl from the early 90s.
From the 90s. That's a good point, yeah.
Like, she clearly, like, on all levels was stuck on, you know, that, quote-unquote, the best time of
but
her life.
But she gets away with it, and there's nothing telling her to stop acting that way because it probably works for her because, you know, people mention a couple of times how much younger she looks than everybody else. And that's why, in part, why Charlize Theron is so perfectly cast here because not only was Charlize Theron kind of a big-time movie babe in the late 90s, but she still kind of looks exactly like she did in the 90s. She really has not aged very much at all. Mm-hmm. And she totally pulls off this, you know...
hotter than thou character.
Right. And that the fact that she looks the way she looks is, you know, you can talk about kind of the... It's like the 30 Rock idea of living in the bubble. That people who are that attractive, and I think this is true to some extent, they can never really have a grip on reality, and they can't really put themselves in other people's shoes because they don't get treated the way that the other 99% of the world does.
You know, they actually did use footage from my high school swim team for sketches, early sketches of Prince Eric.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that's an interesting aspect of her character, too. And a lot of people, I think, looked at this casting and went, how am I supposed to buy Charlize Theron as a Diablo Cody character? But that is the point of her. She is supposed to be the prettiest girl in town.
And I'm going to just go ahead and pull from Roger Ebert's review because I did read
it. Oh, I actually haven't read
that,
it.
Well, he kind of says – I'm pretty sure he liked it fairly well, but – he kind of says, like, the only explanation for Mavis's, you know, behavior is that she is a functioning alcoholic. And
that's
she
an
even
important
says
point
that,
too. That's
and
right.
kind of everybody just ignores it, but she is
no, she's totally
always
an alcoholic.
Drinking
yes.
all the time during this.
And she's lucid about it, too, though. She, I mean, you're right. She points out. She's like, I'm definitely an alcoholic.
Mm. And, you know, maybe... in a small town, that's just, oh, no, that's just a character. You know,
you
they're not
drink.
Acknowledging
yeah.
that it's, like, a genuine illness. And, you know, and she makes reference to the fact that she's depressed, too, you know.
Right.
Like, you know, so she's kind of self-aware but doesn't know what else to do. And no one's really responding to her in a way that helps her get out of it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's safe to believe that she's going to go back to Minneapolis. And
be an alcoholic
and
fall asleep in her clothes like a teenager
and only watch E
and watch
stuff,
that's right
you know?
Yeah
but it's I feel like it was a very very truthful movie. It's not really enjoyable to watch. It's not something that I'm gonna
no
go,
it's
like,
not
I'm really gonna watch this again.
It's a character
but,
piece you know
and like kind of really the, kind of the big twist actually more than anything is that you know she goes and wrecks this baby naming party and is just being just an epic, horrible bitch. And then, you know, and she, you find out that it wasn't the guy leading her on. It was the wife who, incidentally, deals with mentally ill people who invited her to the party. And so, like, all of her, you know, thinking the guy was reciprocating in any way, which, of course, you know, early on we kind of go,
mentally
like...
mentally ill children, actually.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
Is another important point, I think.
And invited her to the party because she felt bad for her. And that's kind of the thing, too. Like, it's such a nice town that when she's acting this horrible at this party, pretty much everyone's just acting out of pity for her. They're like, no, Mavis, we feel bad for you. Like, you're obviously mm-hmm. really messed up. Like, but she's thought she owned this town and everyone was admiring her. But mm-hmm. instead, everybody was going, like, you're pretty sad. Like, this is just pathetic at
right.
this point.
And, you know, I think that... That was an interesting thing to me too. That I think you could have made, and for the most part, the buddy character is really. He is just kind of a decent guy. But they're especially earlier on in the movie, he's kind of an idiot, and he's kind of you know you can see how they ended up together because he is sort of that dumb jock from high school thing. He's not very interesting or smart. He's just kind of the attractive guy who is going about his business. But then he kind of says some dumb things.
But you kind of wonder, too, if he was either putting it on to not, like he was really trying not to lead her on at all. And so,
well, he did kiss her at some point, though.
That's true. But he was drunk. And
right.
It was more of a she kissed him sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, I think, I don't know if it was just a guy being dumb kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
He didn't see where it was going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also want to talk about Patton Oswalt's character and his performance, because I've seen Patton Oswalt do some serious movies where he hasn't done a good job. But you and I have already, we sort of knew what to expect a little bit here, because he has a good bit of experience with Diablo Cody. He started as a minor role,
and then it became really one of the main characters.
Right, he evolved into a pretty major character on United States of Terra, and he meshed very, very well with Diablo Cody's writing style. He delivers her dialogue. It seems very natural coming out of him. I think they sort of speak similarly to
right.
each other.
And I would say he really is, like, there are definitely moments that make you cringe and just cover your face with what's-her-face?
With Mavis.
With Mavis, but he was really the only one who delivered laughs, I would say, in the movie.
He is, and but he's
except
a dark
character. There was one part where you laughed character, really though. Hard, and no one else was laughing yet, and I was like, what are you doing?
I'll tell you what made me give the big laugh was, they're kind of on this stakeout together in the car, and Mavis thinks that she's about to be... It was mostly that I was laughing that Mavis was so determined on this mission, but they're looking at Buddy's car, and he says, "No, that's definitely his car. It's a Jeep Liberty." And she says, "That's ironic, because he has no Liberty." And then she high fives Patton Oswalt, and I thought that was, I mostly just thought it was funny because
no, she doesn't high five. She goes like, "Ha ha!"
Right? She fake laughs, but I mostly thought it was funny because. She was so, like, ideological. She so has it built up that she's, like, going to set him free from this life.
When he's married to a totally nice person and in love right. with his infant daughter and right. just has no interest whatsoever in her.
Yeah, I really like that, too, how much she hates the baby. Is that she's just like, Patton Oswalt keeps bringing it up, and at one point she just says, "Oh, the baby. Mm-hmm. I think Patton Oswalt has some funny lines in it, mostly because he's kind of like
the one person who will say to her, like, "You're being an idiot. You're being a jerk."
He's the only one that really has seen inside what's going on in her brain. No, she hasn't revealed it to anyone else.
Right.
So he knows how crazy it is. Other than us, he's the only one that knows. And you know, he's also not a super fun character to watch because he's clearly got a lot of issues, and he's been, you know, he's been hugely damaged. But I think his backstory is a really smart, clever writing example for Cody. I mean, to me, that's one of her most interestingly developed characters. Yeah, you're watching TV right now.
No, I'm just saying it was Neil. It's
right.
Neil.
I know.
All right.
So.
Well, you're the one who left the TV on.
Well, I'm sorry. But anyways, I think that the way that she, every little detail about that character is very it's very particular to her style, I think. Just the idea that he was badly beaten up because they thought he was gay, but he's not really gay. So then he didn't get any sympathy for it
right.
because it wasn't a hate crime since he wasn't gay. To me, that's the kind of thing, really kind of that joke, if you want to call it that, is the kind of thing that Cody writes that pisses a lot of people off. It pisses like leftist people off. And she did that with Juno too. You know, the way that she dealt with abortion in that movie. Diablo Cody, in a weird way, has a very middle American attitude.
Well, that's where
she's like a really, really intellectual middle American.
Well, because I think kind of the hallmark of middle America is that they're very practical people, you know? So like that you're going to kind of be, you know, thinking it through in a way that, you know, people on either coast are going to be standing on their ideals, and you know, these practical farm people are going to kind of like, going to go like, you know, really think it through and go like, well, wait a minute, it was a hate crime, but then if he's not gay, well, it's not a hate crime anymore, and so who cares, just a random guy getting beaten up, you know, kind of thing.
Yes.
I think that's kind of your middle America.
It's very irreverent, and it's not gonna take away from the people out there who are sort of accusing her of being a conservative. Although I don't think she is. I think she just doesn't buy into any sort of political ideology. I think she's post political. You know, she's a pop culture.
Practical. You know of. You know, the abortion thing, it's not really that Juno decides to keep the baby because of some great ideology. It's because somebody pointed something out, which is true, that an unborn baby has fingernails, and she was kind of like, oh, wow, what?
And also, there's no movie if she has an abortion,
too.
Yeah,
that's the other thing we've talked about, as well as with Knocked Up, when people go like, you know, that's so anti-feminist. Well, it's like, no, well, the movie is about someone having a baby. So if a baby, if they have an abortion 15 minutes in, then you have no movie.
Right.
Hello. And that's, I mean, the same case with Juno. If Juno decides to have an abortion, we have no movie because it's about a teenager having a baby.
I suspect we wouldn't be discussing these kinds of issues if we were doing a podcast on Jennifer's body. So we always have to, this is going to be a knock against Diablo Cody. I could be wrong. I haven't seen it, so
no,
I don't know.
I'm pretty
know.
Sure it's generally reviled.
Yeah, but she's an interesting writer, and there's not that many other people out there that get their name, you know, that are writers.
And her, basically.
I mean, it's her, Aaron
and
Sorkin.
Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, Charlie Kaufman's out there. You know, there aren't that many people that don't direct their own stuff that get mentioned like her. And actually, she is directing her next screenplay.
Kind of scary.
Yeah, we'll see.
Go the way of Michelle Gondry.
We'll see how that goes. I have a feeling that she's going to be pretty straightforward, you know, with her direction style. But
well, and to be fair, Jason Reitman, there's not. I mean, with Juno, there was a certain amount. He doesn't strike me as like that. He's trying real hard to put a stamp on things necessarily. He seems like a pretty straightforward director.
No,
I guess
but
Thank You for Smoking was kind of stylized.
He does.
But
I'll tell you the one stylized element in this that I noticed that was really effective is the opening montage where we're listening to the tape over and over again. I thought was strange when we were watching it, the mixtape.
I didn't because I'm a girl and I've done that before.
Yeah, but the as a filmmaking thing, it's weird. But then you realize later why he did that, which is, he wants you to be really super sure that when you hear that song again, you remember it. Because the moment where we do hear that song again, it's a big moment for her. It's probably, it's a potential turning point that she does not let become one. She doesn't let it stop her.
Right.
That, but, I mean, that to me, actually, that scene where the band is playing the song... If I'm putting Charlize Theron up for an Oscar, that's my Oscar clip for her.
No, her Oscar clip is obviously
her
the
face.
Big soliloquy at the end, though.
That was big too, but I think her she looks so. If you feel bad for her at any point in the movie, that's the scene because she's so wounded by that.
No,
and
but then
she's
she turns
a
on a dime and becomes like irate.
She
and
is,
so angry.
and she's gross about it. But it's never more evident what a child she is than in that moment, because our feelings are so hurt by that, and she can't believe it. As you know, she just completely wasn't expecting. I think up until that point, she believes that he's still as much in love with her as she is with him, and that sort of brings it down.
No, she thinks that all the way until he pushes her face away.
Well, no, I think she reconvinces herself, yeah. But I think in that moment, she's really hurt by that, and she wasn't, you know, I don't know. Charlize Theron's face just brought me down in that scene. I think she did it sort of made me remember, oh, crap, Charlize Theron's an awesome actress. She just happens to look like a supermodel, but she is, I think she's up there with anybody as far as just pure acting chops right now.
Well, the end of the day, I think this is a very well written movie. I think it's a very accurate portrayal. Like, I don't think anybody, there was no learning lessons there, and you know, it was sort of that Seinfeld thing of like, nobody learns anything, nobody mm-hmm. changes or whatever. But you know, I think she very kindly represented the people in the town. I think she very kindly represented Patton Oswalt's character, and you know, I think she very accurately represented the character of the cool girl from high school who, you know, wasn't going to be happy ever anyways.
But she could have, I think she could have been a lot more mean-spirited and let us laugh a lot more at Mavis. And she chose not to, because I think she feels genuine sympathy for people who peaked in high school. I think she doesn't think there's anything funny about that. You know, I think she thinks that is really, truly a depressing fate, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that, I mean, it is amazing how much that is the truth.
Yeah.
When you're in high school and people say, like, oh, but you know what, those cool people, you know, they're going to be working for you someday.
And we've, like, seen
whatever,
a lot.
Whatever, whatever.
We've seen,
like, oh,
a
well.
Lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't convince yourself of that when you're a nerd in high
no.
school.
Have hope, nerds. Teenage nerds, if we have any teenage listeners. They probably don't listen to us because they probably don't want anyone to think that they're loser nerds.
Whatever. There are awesome teenagers out there. I was one of them.
Right. Would you have listened to a podcast like this when you were a teenager?
Well, Matt,
if you had
still
podcasts.
Listening to vinyl back then.
Right.
Just kidding. I'm not that old.
What is this MP3?
I read Ebert reviews, though. That's when that started, when I was
I
in
did,
high
too.
School.
I read Roger Ebert
scene.
In high school. Yeah.
I would read his reviews every week.
I would say that that Roger Ebert would probably be one of the two or three most influential things on me that made me get into movies.
Things on you? Is that right? Oh, boy.
I would say Roger Ebert, the AFI 100 list, and Turner Classic Movies. Those three things combined are responsible for me being a movie nerd.
Pretty much Ebes.
Just
and
Ebes,
then Matt on movies. No, actually, it was Ebes and then not having any friends throughout college and having a library card is what made me a movie
yeah.
nerd. Instead, I had a lot of free time, and I would go and check out five or six movies at a time.
Shout out to all the film nerds who got their movie watching work done with a library card.
Okay.
That's a you know, we like to bring that to. I like to recognize what makes you a true film nerd, and I think that's one of the things. If you use the heck out of the DVD library,
yeah,
at your public library,
and I did.
All right, well, that was a nice little tangent at the end there, but we're still sort of behind. We've got quite a few major Christmas releases.
I'm not
going
to see War Horse.
There's probably not going to be a War Horse podcast with Francesca, but. There have been discussions about a potential roundtable podcast for War Horse as soon as I see it. So look out for that. But Francesca and I still have quite a lot that we'd like to catch up on.
What?
So there's stuff out there.
What?
We'll talk about it.
Well, I'd like to know right now.
On the air? You want to discuss this now?
No, I just literally can't think of any other movies that I wanted to see.
Oh, there's stuff.
I don't want to see War Horse.
It's not going to be War Horse. War Horse. Where's my war horse?
Horsey, why are you fighting a war? You can't hold a gun.
You know, Graham Flanagan said that War Horse is one of the greatest films ever made.
He is an idiot. It's a horse, and it's war.
Yeah?
The end. Why don't I call it War Tank? War Bomb. I'd be interested in that.
War Bomb. You would see a movie called War Bomb?
Yeah. I would.
Yeah.
Before I'd see a movie called War Horse.
Send all of your angry emails to matt@filmnerds.com.
Yeah, send them to Matt.
and I will pass them along to Francesca. I will print them out and
I will tear them
and tape
and stomp on them.
Tape them
foot.
To her bathroom mirror so that she has to read them. So
I don't ever look in the mirror. Look at me.
Thank you everybody for listening and
nobody's listening to this, folks. Nobody saw this movie.
No.
Diablo Cody, if you listen.
Yeah, go see this if you have a chance to, because I think it's a very interesting, piece, and I think everybody should give it a shot. And Charlize Theron should be nominated for it, so you don't want to be left behind. The end. Bye.